What happens when a medieval kingdom collides with the 21st century while sitting atop the world's largest oil reserves? Saudi Arabia stands as one of the world's most paradoxical nations, where women can't drive but own businesses worth millions, where religious police patrol streets yet princes party in European nightclubs, where ancient tribal codes govern a society awash in smartphone-wielding youth. This isn't just another Middle Eastern monarchy. It's a high-stakes experiment in whether absolute power, religious authority, and modern wealth can coexist indefinitely. The answer matters far beyond the kingdom's borders, affecting global oil markets, terrorism networks, and the stability of an entire region that supplies energy to the world. Abdulaziz built Saudi Arabia using a survival formula his descendants still employ: divide society to prevent unified opposition, distribute oil wealth to buy loyalty, exploit religion to justify royal rule, and benefit from a population conditioned to submission. Abdulaziz transformed nomadic Bedouins into settled communities, where religious teachers preached that Islamic identity trumped tribal bonds. Anyone judging by standards outside the Quran became a kafir, a non-believer. While his partner, Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, wanted to purify Arabia for God, Abdulaziz wanted to conquer it for his family. Together, they made religious devotion and political obedience inseparable. The contrast with George Washington is striking. Washington fought for religious freedom and democratic federation before voluntarily retiring. Abdulaziz battled fellow Arabs to create a kingdom for one religious sect and one family, ruling until his 1953 death after fathering 44 sons by 22 wives. His elderly sons still rule today, claiming they're the glue holding the country together, conveniently ignoring that revering one remarkable founder doesn't justify extending that reverence to thousands of descendants who merely share his name. Saudi Arabia operates as a welfare state where citizens pay zero taxes and receive free education, healthcare, and subsidized utilities, yet have no voice in governance. With 80% of government revenue from oil flowing into royal coffers without public accounting, and 40% of the disclosed budget hidden under other sectors, royal spending pervades society through contracts, charities, and favors. As one official laments, "We have been made a nation of beggars." Religion serves as the monarchy's trump card. The Saudi king functions as both emperor and pope, with the Wahhabi sect teaching Muslims to obey rulers, citing the Quran, "O you who have believed, obey Allah and obey the messenger and those in authority among you." When justification is needed, whether for U.S. troops in 1990 or violence against mosque occupiers in 1979, the handpicked council of senior ulama provides it. The final pillar is overwhelming conformity. Unlike Western individualism, Saudis fear standing out. "Society controls behavior," explains one U.S.-educated Saudi, forcing people to wear multiple faces and creating psychological stress. Yet this manipulation now threatens the regime, as more Saudis, especially women and youth, demand greater freedom and dignity. Religion hangs over Saudi Arabia like a heavy fog. Prayer spaces occupy every public building. Mecca direction indicators appear in hotel rooms, and calls to prayer echo 5 times daily. Yet despite this omnipresence, Islam's unifying power is fracturing. The regime has weaponized religion so thoroughly that religious authorities now appear as regime puppets, damaging their credibility. More Saudis interpret the Quran themselves rather than relying on Wahhabi scholars. Women find verses supporting equality, while fundamentalists cite others justifying female subordination. The internet and satellite television expose Saudis to diverse Islamic voices, creating fatwa shopping among youth seeking rulings that align with their preferences. The absurdity is evident. Religious scholars rule on whether cell phones containing Quranic verses can enter toilets, or what constitutes minimum marriage age for girls. As one Imam University professor laments, "We memorize the Quran, but we don't live it." Meanwhile, wealthy Saudis maintain private liquor cabinets and indulge forbidden pleasures abroad, particularly in neighboring Bahrain, while condemning these same behaviors publicly. Of all Saudi Arabia's societal divisions, none cuts deeper than the battle over women's rights, a proxy war between modernizers and conservatives over the kingdom's future. While Arab youth challenged authoritarian regimes during the 2011 Arab Spring, Saudi women confronted authority by organizing driving protests and demonstrations outside the Interior Ministry. The dependency is suffocating. As sociologist Fawzia Al-Bakr puts it, girls wait to be selected like a commodity from a fruit stand. For a Saudi woman, there is no legal age for having no guardian. She is always dependent on some male. Women comprise 60% of university graduates, yet only 12% of the workforce. Religious prohibitions against gender mixing prevent qualified women from filling desperately needed positions. What's new isn't the dependence, it's the growing resentment. At Saudi Aramco's college preparatory program, female students preparing for foreign universities understand they've earned their positions by outperforming male applicants. "We know the opportunities won't come voluntarily," one declares. As Gandhi said, "we have to make our own change." Saudi women may remain trapped in cocoons, but they're flexing to burst free, a process that may ultimately prove liberating for all of Saudi society. Friday afternoons on Riyadh's Talia Street showcase defiant youth lounging against souped-up cars, blasting English rap in jeans and t-shirts. Police observe, but don't intervene, despite violations of religious decorum. These rebels endure severe restrictions. No cinemas, no dating, shopping malls barred to unaccompanied young men. Even at Imam Mohammed bin Saud University, where 16,000 devout students study Islamic law, change emerges. Saud, 21, questions Salafi teachings. "I depend on myself to research and answer. I have no specific sheikh," a radical break from traditional deference to religious authorities. Across ideological lines, Saudi youth share alienation, poor education, and unemployment. Unlike parents who prospered during the 1970s oil boom, today's generation faces failing schools and vanishing opportunities. Unemployment among 20 to 24-year-olds hits 39%, women at 45.5%, men at 30.3%. Their rulers' lavish, non-Islamic lifestyles clash with religious pretensions and youth's declining standards, creating fertile ground for extremist recruitment. Saudi Arabia faces a critical succession crisis as Abdulaziz's elderly sons near their end. With 89-year-old King Abdullah appointing three crown princes in 8 months, the royal family must decide whether to continue passing the crown among aging brothers or transition to a new generation. For 15 years, the kingdom has lacked functional leadership, with all decisions funneling to the king's desk. The economy stagnates despite massive oil wealth. 1 in 3 people is a foreigner. 9 out of 10 private sector workers are non-Saudi. Oil reserves deplete with no significant new discoveries, while domestic consumption soars. Financial experts predict expenditures will exceed oil revenues by 2014, with foreign assets depleted by 2030. Within Saudi Aramco's compound exists a model of what Saudi society could be, a meritocracy where men and women, Sunnis and Shias, work efficiently together. Religious police are banned, and competence trumps sectarian identity. This parallel society proves Saudis can remain uniquely Saudi while competing globally. Yet even modest reforms seem beyond reach as the Al Saud fear escalating demands from frustrated youth and alienating religious conservatives. The question isn't whether change is coming, it's whether that change arrives through gradual reform or catastrophic collapse.